Hey Jill, we're recording an
Hey.
intro, so what does that mean?
Maybe that means we need to add a little context.
Yes, so this is with the one and only Andrew Pierce from The Curb in
Yes.
Australia. Really fantastic guy. We've been
So
in
great.
many of the same circles for years. This is a late episode,
Just a
and
smidge.
just a smidge. We recorded this right around the Oscars, which really was not that long ago, but it feels like 8 years because everybody's moved on. But we wanted to have Andrew on for the first episode of our launched website, and that took us a little while because the
Yeah.
website is very extensive and beautiful, and I love it. I hope you do.
I do. It's a beaut. It's a beaut, Clark. It's a beaut.
It's a beaut. So some of this is a little outdated, especially the first, I think it's 27, 28 minutes. I'll put the timestamps in the show notes. So we do talk about award season, and really I enjoyed his opinions. And then we talk about his time this year, his first time voting on the Golden Globes. And then we talk about Australian films and just really the state of the industry, which I thought was fascinating. I don't know if you.
Oh, it was an incredible conversation. I really loved picking Andrew's brain a little bit on not only just the process of voting with the Golden Globes, which, and we talk about this on the episode, but like, in the wake of the scandals that have plagued that organization, and kind of how they're, Andrew's part of this new group that they've brought in to make things much better and above board. And so it was really cool to kind of learn about that process, and also learn about Australian film. It's a very vibrant, active, industry. And yes, it's more than Baz Luhrmann, believe it or not. And we
It
talk about
is.
that quite a bit too. So,
But there's also a competition from Hollywood, and we get into that as
yes.
well. So, a really good
Yes.
conversation. I think you all will enjoy it. And our website did soft launch, so there are we put it
Did.
up there really just for the community tools and also just for some of our branding.
And
We
it
have a
just,
few little
listen,
things to
it looks
fix.
a lot better than what we had up before. We still have a few kinks that we need to work out. We know that everything is not quite perfect or where we want it to be, but it's looking great. And every day we're fixing little things here and there. And yeah, so we soft launch, and that's what we've been working on the past few months, is getting that baby cooking. So that's where we're at.
So here's the episode, and thanks, Andrew, for giving us your time,
Yes,
and
thank
I'm
you.
sure we'll talk again, and take care, Jill.
You too.
Andrew and
Hi.
Jill. I guess I should say hi
G'day.
to Jill first. So hello.
Yeah, it's about time you say hi to me.
about time. I know. I never talked
Yeah.
to you. And then
Never.
I'm very, very thrilled to have Andrew Pierce here. It's been a long time coming. You're with The Curb, and I know you had a prior project. It's been years though. I can't remember what it was called. The Curb is an interesting name though. So and it's was it been 3, 4 years since you rebranded?
Yeah, so it's been 6 years, would you believe? Coming up, so
Wow.
5.5 years. 1st of July it'll be 6 years. So it's a bit crazy, but it's been good. And there's no deep meaning behind the curb. It was literally just the name that was available as a domain. So people ask me, does it mean anything? And it's like, no, it's just what was available, and
I
it's
just
stuck.
assumed people in Australia just threw out their movies on the curb, and that's like a thing. So
Well,
no.
yeah. I mean, and we even spell the curb differently here. It's KERB. So it's like, I'm even leaning into an American spelling. Whatever. It's
We
fine.
won't tell. We won't tell.
Yeah.
But
No.
welcome. Do you want to share a little bit about what you do on your project and kind of the history behind it?
Yeah. So basically, I've been a film critic and interviewer for almost 10 years now. But for the past 6 years, effectively, yeah, I focus mostly on Australian films, which has been
quite a delight because, as I'm sure we'll probably talk about later on, usually people don't know that they exist. We have an output of about over 100 films annually, which usually maybe one or two of them are aware globally that they exist. So, I figured that there was a bit of a gap in covering those kinds of things, and that's where I've dedicated most of my focus to. In the path of doing that, I also do mostly interviews as well now. I've kind of transitioned from reviews into interviews and have thoroughly enjoyed doing that and doing deep dive discussions with people, which has been quite exciting and something very
Awesome.
different. So, yeah, that's what I do at The Curb. I also am part of the Australian Film Critics Association. And as we'll talk about later on as well, I'm a Golden Globes voter, which is as much of a surprise to me as it is to everybody else.
We should preface that by saying you're the new Globes voter, not the old Globes voter. Just
That's
like you,
correct, yeah.
you're not the HPFA. Well, thank you.
No.
I'm sure you're responsible. We have a lot of Australian actors and actresses here in America that do Engl American accents. So thanks to you, Andrew, and your country for providing.
And
Well, I guess
I just want
Margot
to
Robbie,
know,
she got
well, one
snubbed.
thing we'll talk about is that there are more Australian movies directed, not directed by Baz Luhrmann. So that'll be a nice thing
Yes.
to get into, because that's pretty much
Yes.
all we hear about here.
And you know what? I'm sorry. And no offense, Baz Luhrmann is not my thing. I have an allergy to Baz Luhrmann, but yeah, I love classic
I have an
Australian
allergy,
films.
except I loved Romeo and Juliet. I thought that was quite good.
Okay, that
I'm
was
not,
fun. That was fun.
I saw that opening night, and the theater was just, it was so packed, and people were buying tickets to other movies to get in there, and people were in the aisles. So I've never been to a movie like that before. It was insane. And then,
Yeah.
of course, I was that jackass that at the very end, and I'm not spoiling anything. Everybody knows Romeo and Juliet, you know what happens. But I was that
It's a
jackass
happy ending, right?
at the very end
Mm-hmm.
when Claire Danes' Juliet wakes up and sees that Romeo is dead, and she lets out this kind of like cry bark. It's like, and I just laughed my ass off. But anyways, I digress.
Oh,
We will
no.
talk
Yeah.
more about movies not by Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, no, I
Yeah.
mean, Filton Noyes, there's lot Peter Weir, the classic new wave, like I love a lot of those movies. In fact, I didn't the name was on the tip of my tongue when your daughter had her Mononoke costume and she had the
Oh,
red
yeah.
paint, and I think
Yeah.
that was Celia. So there's a couple
Yeah.
Australian films on the on that folk horror set. So yeah, and I think Australian films are awesome. We need more of them. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, glad to have you, Andrew. We've been well, we you, I Jill and I've been doing this about 10 years too. It's kind of weird that we've never yeah, well, we've crossed paths a lot, social media and there, but we've
Yeah.
never been on each other's shows. So well, and now we have a new project. So welcome to Cine Journeys.
Yeah.
Have
Yeah,
you
I'm very
been talking to
excited.
us?
Very, very
Yeah.
excited. Yeah, so
Yeah.
congratulations to both.
And oh, thank you. Yeah, I've been doing whatever the hell it is I do. For let's see, what year is this? 24. Well, maybe since 2010, 2011, but I was pretty much operating just in like classic film circles and those weirdos, and was doing freelance, that kind of thing. So really, when Aaron and I met, I was writing for Filmstruck. And I was starting to kind of break out of that classic film, classic Hollywood bubble that is just, I love that bubble, but it's sometimes it gets a bit too much. And the arguments are stale, and no one wants to watch anything new, and they think anything new is bad. And so that kind of so this is kind of new territory for me, because I'm watching films that I wouldn't normally watch. I've pick up this Chantel Ackerman set, which I probably would
Nice,
not have
nice.
done, if this had come out 10 years ago. So, and talking to people with different backgrounds in film. So this is kind of a, I don't know, this is like my own little personal cine journey,
I
meeting new people. And
can't wait
look
for
at
your
that.
take on Jean
Look,
Dielman,
all
Quay to
the,
Commerce,
look at the
the best film.
personal growth, Aaron, that you've seen with
I
me. I
have.
mean, I'm
Yeah.
like, I'm a different person. Look at this.
I take responsibility, but she still hasn't
You
seen a
should.
Bergman.
I have not seen a Bergman.
That's going to
It's
change this
like,
year. This year.
it's going to change this year, but I just kind of feel like I'm trying to hold out. Everybody said, oh, you got to see a
Look.
Bergman film. And I'm like, the fuck I do.
I put it this way, right? So I've watched Mac and Me almost annually. I've lost count of how many times
Oh,
I've
yeah,
seen
it's
it.
great.
I've never seen Tokyo Story, right? And I do have it there. I need to watch it, but it's like, all
You're
right, sitting
like,
down to watch Mac and Me again,
but
still
I'm
haven't
gonna
seen
watch
Tokyo
Mac
Story.
and Me. Fuck you. I'm not doing
Yeah,
that.
well, Mac and Me in Tokyo Story. I did not expect that. But
That's one hell of a double
the thing is,
bill. I
Tokyo
think, yeah.
Story is a terrible Ozu intro. I would say Late Spring or the or Good Morning because they fart. You know, who doesn't want a Japanese classic movie where they fart? Boys
I'm
fart.
just holding
It
out for
happens.
Criterion to do the full set, right? So when they do the full set, then I'll
Yeah.
dive in.
Then you'll
That's,
go on that odyssey. Yeah.
speaking
I'm
of
putting the
missed
pressure on them.
opportunity, they could have done the
Yeah.
sniff and scratch and snip like polyester.
I think they need to put Mac and Me out on Criterion 4K. I'll
Yeah,
tell you.
we were gonna do a So Bad They're Good series. I think we're gonna push that a little bit, but boy, that Mac and Me would be a great. I mean, it's a yeah. Don't get me started, but it's such a bonkers movie. I'm sure Andrew, you'd have some things to say.
McDonald's ET, you
ET,
know,
yeah,
it's like
but like a
yeah,
fraction of the quality. And by when I say fraction, I'm thinking like 2 out of 2% fraction of quality.
I will say that like I'm also on Rotten Tomatoes, which is quite a delight, but I'm the person who pushed Mac and Me from 0% to 4%. I did write a very long positive review of it, so it's no longer a 0% film. I just want to make that clear.
I also have a Rotten Tomatoes profile, but it has not been updated in about 20 years. So yeah, but I think it's a good site. But Andrew, I know you're we'll talk about the Globes, we'll talk about Australian films, but can you just give me your thoughts on award season this year? Like what stood out?
I mean,
What didn't?
it's so hard to distance yourself from the like we know what's going to win. So therefore it's hard to kind of separate the fact that that feels kind of boring if you're really into award season and get into it. It's like, oh, we know what's going to win. But if we take a step back for a second, like the Best Picture nominees, I don't think I've seen in recent years a list that is as great as it actually is. You know, I think in years to come, we'll look back and go, wow, this is actually a really spectacular lineup of
Yeah.
films. Save for like Maestro, which I don't see why it needs to be in there, but that's just me, you know, I whatever. But
They love a biopic. I mean, that's just, they can't, that
can't.
this
It's
catnip.
all about the nose. They
It's like a
love, you
baby with
know,
candy. They can't
yeah.
stop.
They
Yeah.
love movies about Hollywood and they love a good biopic with prosthetics. Like that's just absolute catnip.
What's funny
Yeah,
is
so
we've been doing a journey on award season, and it's been a lot of fun. And now we're having people vote for their choices for the Oscars and then predictions. And obviously the two are very, very different. But we're also having people rank their top 10, or not their top 10, but the best pictures. And every single list I've seen so far has Maestro at 10. So, including mine, I there's some good about it, but I think you're right. There's so many great films that weren't nominated. Yeah, it's a really strong year.
But I think that's the thing is that the when we talk about a film like Maestro, which isn't a really bad film, it's not a terrible film. Like it's a solid 3, 3.5 star film. But as soon as you put the label Best Picture on it, and as soon as you put all those awards things on it changes the film, whether the film deserves it or not. And it's like that, I think, is the really difficult and harsh thing about the awards season because of the fact that it turns really perfectly average films into something that it shouldn't be. You know, it adds pressure onto the film. Yeah. So that I think is one of the main concerns about the Oscars. And it's been always been the concern for me, because suddenly you get films that people think are great, but just because they were nominated for Best Picture or even won Best Picture.
Yeah,
And
I
it's
mean,
like,
it can be a, I think more times than not, it can be a curse. I mean, we know that it can be a curse for people's careers, because if they get an Oscar for a particular role, then they get typecast, and then so we've seen that happen. But I do think on rare occasion they get it right and they nominate a film that maybe the masses have not seen. And then that gets the right attention on that film. But I mean, we have to be honest, like on foreign film, on it, you know, what is it like? Usually screenplay or adapted might be like a more of an independent film that might get, or you know,
Yeah, the
but
writing is,
nobody outside of our world is going to go, oh, I think I'm going to watch the best, you know, international picture. No, it's always best actor, best actress, best picture. And those are the ones that are going to get, and very rarely, I think, do they actually give the Oscar to the correct person or project. I don't know how I feel. Was last year Everything Everywhere?
It was,
pretty much a sweep for the mostly. Well, at this year, and I don't know if you noticed, I changed my background to Zone of Interest, because that I think the awards have been a little more international this year, and that I think a lot of years a movie like Zone of Interest, Anatomy of a Fall, wouldn't get the kind of attention they're getting. Even Society of the Snow got a little bit. So yeah, it's and then Past Lives too. You know, even though that's a Canadian production, it's basically a foreign language film almost because of the Korean characters. And it's a weird year. But yeah, Zone of Interest is well, probably will win sound. But to your point, Jill, like Lily Gladstone, Randolph from Holdovers, they're probably gonna win. Gladstone and Stone are kind of like up in the air, but they haven't done a ton, so they're gonna get a major boon from this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it could be a good thing, but I don't know. I'm always kind of like, I don't know about this. And there is such a history of them. And now that they've gotten, are they still doing the most popular?
No, that was the Globes.
That was the Globes. Okay.
Hold that thought. Hold that
I know
thought.
that they were toying with that with the Academy Awards. I mean, I'm telling you, the last like 5, 6 years, I have tuned out so much because I was so sick of all of it. But I think that it's one of these things where it can be a real, I just think a lot of shitty movies win Best Picture is what it comes down to. Now, Parasite, I think that was wonderful, and I didn't hate Everything Everywhere. I mean, I thought it was fine. I don't know how it would hold up in on repeat viewings, but we just did a journey on modern classics, and we picked films from like the last, was it like 20 years,
It's
Aaron,
post
roughly?
2000, yeah,
And these are
but mostly
movies.
20 years,
And most of these movies got very little love at the Academy Awards. And a lot of the people on the call had not seen these movies. And revisiting them, they all hold up. They all stand the
Every single one.
test. Every single one of them.
Just about. I mean, there were no like threes or two ratings for
No,
anything, I think,
no.
really.
Everything held up. And it wasn't that they didn't get any kind of critical acclaim, because There Will Be Blood was on there. But it got overshadowed by No Country for Old Men. What was that, 2008? I think that came out.
Same year,
And so I don't know. We talked a lot about how the Academy Awards are definitely kind of a snapshot of what's going on culturally, right? But they're not a barometer for what is a good film, what is a lasting. We had a call with Michael Shulman, the author of Oscar Wars, and He basically was like, Jill, I'm picking up that you aren't really into this. But he kind of he sold me on it, sort of, where he was like, you know, this is really important as it does kind of give you an idea of what was happening culturally. And so I was kind of looking at that going, oh yeah, that probably makes sense. So it's not an arbiter of what is good film, but it is, hey, this is what was happening at the time. So I've tried to approach this whole thing with a more of an open mind. But I do I guess the whole awards brouhaha and the predictions and the, without naming names, there's a few players in this arena who are just flat out obnoxious. And it gets old. Don't know where I'm
No, that's
going with
yeah.
any of this. This is just one of my famous rants. And
But I think you're right though. Like it is a cultural litmus test. Like would
yeah.
any of us remember Coda if it didn't win Best Picture? But Coda is a
It's a fun movie,
perfect
yeah.
example of like it's a nice film, but it's a perfect example of
It's an okay film. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. Am I gonna, in 30 years, look, if I'm still alive, look back on it and be like, oh, what a God. You know, it's the
No, but
Citizen
Power of the
Kane
Dog,
of,
you will do, right?
that's
So,
right.
but
Power of Dog's
everybody
a great
at the
example.
time, everybody at the time was locked down in the world and they wanted something positive to look forward to. And it's like, I remember watching Coda and then watching Power of the Dog and showing it to my partner. And it's like, she's like, they're killing rabbits and all this kind of stuff. It was a feel bad experience. And it was something that she's remembered a lot more than Coda, but that feeling afterwards was not there. And so, everybody wants that positivity from Coda, and that's what we needed at the time. So it becomes that cultural touchstone. Is it a good film? Right. But that's what it's all about. It's a cultural litmus test of where we were standing at the time. And I've always found it interesting that there's been some people who have held the opinion that like the best picture has been this response to the American president at the time. And it's interesting to see what the actual perspective is from that over the years. But I think that might be changing because of the more global international presence, and which has allowed films like Parasite to win, which has allowed films like Zone of Interest to get nominated. That certainly wouldn't have happened 10 years ago
No.
at all.
And that is the great thing about the changes that they've made. I mean, it's still, you know, it took them way too long to get it to this point. They still have a ton more to do, but it has been nice to see that, yeah, we are getting some international films actually getting recognized in the big category. We're getting some, you know, we're getting some color in nominees, so that's nice. But we, you know, there's a long, long, long way to go. And I guess as they bring more people into the academy, into the voting body, that'll change too, where it's not just stodgy old white dudes, you know.
As we grow, they'll grow. And as Michael put it, it's what a voting body thinks is the best. So this year, obviously Barbenheimer was the big deal, and it's going to be rewarded. I think mostly Oppenheimer, but I think Barbie might pick up maybe production design. I'm not sure. I guess the people that are listening to this already know, but Andrew, did you have any favorites this year? Were you on board for Barbenheimer or anything else?
Like they're both films. They both,
Correct
they
answer.
exist.
They're both
I've watched
films. I
it.
love
Survey
that.
says ding ding ding.
A movie, that is.
I mean, it's like Past Lives is still the best film of the year. That and
It's my
Fallen
favorite
Leaves,
too.
like, yeah, there and it's the frustrating thing. Like there's always this, if you follow the season as it goes along, there's always these peaks and troughs, and they're like, oh look, Past Lives is going to win Best Picture. They were saying that back in June, July last year, and it's like, okay, so you've basically killed its chances at anything. And of course it only got screenplay and Best Picture nomination, but that's kind of It becomes then the whole positioning of when a film gets released. Are we going to get an award? All this kind of stuff. And it doesn't matter. I don't know. I just feel that it would be nice to see something like Past Lives have gotten a lot more recognition than it did. But again, it also doesn't have the star power. It doesn't have somebody like Marty Scorsese behind it to bring somebody like Lily Gladstone up. And that's the problem as well, where it's interesting if we talk about short films for a second, reading those the anonymous ballots and stuff, and somebody rightly was having an argument about short films and saying, well, I don't understand, like Wes Anderson's likely going to win live action short, but this used to be the award that you'd be able to recognize somebody who's up and coming, not somebody who's been established, right? So what are we doing awarding it to somebody like Wes Anderson who's been around for decades, you know? Is it all just about the name? And that's the thing as well, is it's like the other short film too. There's another short film that's about which is John Lennon and Yoko Ono in the title. It's a perfectly serviceable film, but it's also a case of if you're not going to watch the shorts, you probably just tick that one because you know who those people are. So
That's
it
right.
comes back to celebrity. And that's what leans into the best picture nominees and the other categories as well. It's like, unless somebody else has deemed it to be really good, which I think is the case of Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest. I'm not a fan of Zone of Interest myself, but because Anatomy of a Fall won those awards, and because it's a very accessible film, that's part of how it's gotten to where it is. If it didn't have that, it wouldn't be where it is. And it's the same with, I think Taste of Things is probably a great example of that, where it should have been nominated for a lot more, but because it ended up in the argument of, well, France selected that over Anatomy of a Fall. And it's like, well, should then that raises the ultimate question of should we actually be competing films against one another? And it's like, who knows?
And I was one of those that said, France messed up by nominating or not nominating Anatomy of a Fall, but I didn't hear much about Taste of Things until recently, and I hear it's amazing. It also has Juliette Binoche, which I've been talking about a little bit lately. I'll just leave it at that. I loved Juliette Binoche, though. Have you seen
To
Taste of Things?
me, I think it's a masterpiece. I think it is.
Really?
I love Anatomy of a Fall, don't get me wrong, but Taste of Things is like it sits next to Tampopo for me. Like
Really?
it's one of
Yeah.
the great food films. Yeah,
I
the
heard
first
to
20
go
minutes are
hungry.
literally just yeah, exactly. First 20 minutes are no speaking whatsoever. It's literally just her cooking in the kitchen with her helpers, and it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And that's the thing that really frustrates me is it's a stunning, stunning film. And yet, because people go, well, it's not Anatomy of a Fall, and it's like, no, sorry, Aaron, I'm not pointing fingers at you, but it's like,
I'm so offended.
but because people say that, like, it gets swept under
Yeah.
the rug
Yeah.
and it's discarded before people have even entered the cinema, and that's the thing that frustrates me about the award season.
And it's with any sort of consensus vote, in case of the Oscars, it's a very large consensus, is that everything gets a little streamlined. So some of those that will hold up, they're just kind of homogenized, because the voting body finds, a biopic or something better. But yeah, so I could totally see Past Lives. Hopefully the taste of things, I haven't seen it, so I don't know if I'll love it, but it sounds like my kind of film. Yeah, hopefully. So I think we'll need to do modern classics in 20 years, Jill. And
I
I'm
know.
going to go ahead and submit both those films. I'm just gonna can we remember that?
So, Andrew, I'm curious what you thought about Scorsese movie. Why am I having
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Thank you.
I think that's fantastic. Like
Okay.
I'm not really much of a Scorsese fan. Like I think
Okay.
he's a master, and I love
Yeah.
watching his films when I'm watching them, but I don't
Sure.
tend to think about them much afterwards. But Killers of the Flower Moon, I think is one of his very best, and
Okay.
it controversially comes down to the ending for me, because I think
Right.
that is a very important part of him having that conversation about the role of storytelling, the role of literature, and the role of the people who are telling stories. And it's usually white dudes. And that, I
Right.
think, is such a really, like, him putting himself on trial in that way is quite profound. I thought it was, yeah, it's just really quite a magnificent film. And it sat with me a lot more than Oppenheimer has. I know Oppenheimer is a great film, don't get me wrong, but it's just,
Yeah.
I love the
it feels to
score.
Fermin actually says something. Yeah.
Robbie Robertson. Yeah, well, one thing we found with award season is that there are people in camps. So there's the Oppenheimer camp, there's the Killers of the Flower Moon camp, and then everybody loves Past Lives. So that and Anatomy of a Fall, and everybody hates Maestro. So I want to get to the Globes. So Andrew, I think it's fascinating that you voted this year, and I do want to hear about how that came about. I just want to actually preface it by I think we all have been frustrated with the Globes for a long time. It's been more spectacle than really rewarding art, even though it's
Oh, it's a mess.
subjective.
It was a mess.
Yeah,
I think you
I
can
of
just come
course
right out and say it was an absolute mess.
it was a mess. I mean, and of course the history, there's the Pia Zadora thing. I know that was a long time ago. There was the Nepo Baby presenters. I think they still do that, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
Yeah.
and
There's certain
I'm not
things they
gonna
can't shake. Yeah.
I'm not gonna criticize. I just saw Dune 2 with Josh Brolin, and he's a Nepo baby, and he was funny. Or actually not in that not in, nothing was funny in Dune 2. So
I'm trying to think who
tell
the original Nepo baby would have been. Would it have been like Douglas Fairbanks Jr.?
You probably have to go way back. Yeah,
I'll have to go way
maybe,
back.
maybe, maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna
But
think on that.
who's the first Nepo baby? Maybe the our listeners can give us some ideas. So how did this work, Andrew? I mean, I sense that you were frustrated too, right? With where the
Yeah, I
Globes.
mean, like there's possibly something that's more just the Australianism of it all, where I get frustrated when we tend to get forgotten about things because we do exist. We are a fairly large nation, even though we don't have a huge population. We do exist. We are important. We do a lot of stuff. And so I always was frustrated when it's like the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. It's like, well, like fuck it is like, you're all based in LA or New York. Like there's no foreign about it. And so when the opportunity came forward to and it's just a random email that popped in my inbox and I thought it was spam to start off with.
Wow.
And so I was like, I'm not going to touch that. But yeah, effectively I just submitted an application and went, yeah, I'll see what happens. And then surprise, surprise, I got an email to say, congratulations, you're a Golden Globes voter. And it's like, even if I've had to, basically, we have to apply every single year. And so whether I'll be a Golden Globes voter for next year or not, I don't know. But it's basically, at the very least, I got to be a Golden Globes voter once. And I got to see from the inside looking out what the machinations of it all was like. And that was a
Oh, cool.
fascinating process, especially seeing as a rebuild, because yes, I was frustrated. I was like, this is supposed to be a litmus of quality. And as a film critic, I'm like, we are often the guiding force of how we actually say what is good, what is not good, that kind of thing. It's not the industry saying we think we're good because of this. It's people who have got years and years of experience putting their critical eye on something and saying, we think this is valuable. Here's why we think it's valuable. Have an expensive trophy for it. And that I think is, take it or leave it, but I think that that is really important. And so having the ability to be part of something that was a restructure and a change of things and to hopefully bring in the Golden Globes into a new kind of world, felt really, it felt like something I wanted to be part of at the very least, just to see how it worked and to see what would happen. And yeah, look, I think it was interesting. Yeah.
You know, one thing I've always liked about the Golden Globes is that there is a besides the kind of shady history of, bribes and, all that crap. But there was a focus on films that or performances that would not get any attention from the Academy. So a lot of comedy Yeah, I think back just in the history of the Globes, you know, Marilyn Monroe got recognized for, I think, for Some Like It Hot, and didn't get any because the industry did not take her seriously, even though she was a very, very good actress. So that was one thing I always liked about the Globes, is that you would see some mainly comedic performances or musical performances get some due. So that part of it I've always loved. But now that they are kind of restructuring, I do like that we're possibly getting a little more sophistication in the types of roles that are getting nominated. But I kind of hope that some of that will rub off on the Oscars as well, and that maybe we will see more comedic performances. Like, I would love it if those were more in, I know that they're completely different and the voting bodies are different, but it would be nice to see more of a complement there.
Couldn't agree more. And that's the thing, like, sorry to interrupt, Aaron, but
Oh,
I
go on.
think that was part of, like, if I look back at my time as a Globes voter for the 2024 season, like, there are a few things I'm really proud of, that I'm part of a group that recognized Lily Gladstone for Best Actress. I think that's something I'm really proud
It's
of.
great.
But also the recognition for Fallen Leaves, not just in Best International Film, but Alma Poitsis getting a nomination for Best Comedic Actress is like, you don't see that happen. That's exactly what you're talking about. Like, that doesn't happen at all. And in an interview that she did, she talked about how it's like 50 years since an actress from her neck of the woods had been recognized internationally. And it's like, that's
That's
huge.
awesome.
And especially for a film like that, like a Karasmaki film getting recognized that way, like, as listeners would probably know, like, he's such a dry director that recognizing and understanding that comedy is hard. So it was comforting to know that my fellow critics also went, yeah, this is something that's worthwhile. I'm touched by that.
Yeah, about as dry a comedy as you can get is his style. And I'll be honest with you, Andrew. I think a few years ago, people still saw the Golden Globes as kind of a predictor, I guess, of what's going to happen. It's because it's early, right before all the Guild nominations, and kind of right at the height of the Critics Awards. But of course, with everything that happened, and if you don't know, well, probably if you don't know, you might have been living under a rock. But the Golden Globes had some controversy. That's probably an understatement. And so I'll be honest, Andrew. When the Globes came on, we're doing this award season thing, I kind of feel like, I'm not going to say it's my job to watch the Globes, but I kind of feel obligated to keep up with it. But I was really reluctant. And then I was very pleasantly surprised. I was pleasantly surprised by the nominees, and I'm giving you 100% of that credit, Andrew. So, well done. Well done, mate.
And all of the losers as well, is my responsibility.
Thank you, Andrew, for single-handedly making the
Saving
Golden
some, yeah.
Globes, saving the
You
Golden Globes.
did it. You're
You
the Gregory Peck of the
did
Golden Globes. If you've heard our
it.
Oscar Wars episode, you'll get that. But the one thing interesting is that historically the Globes always had musical comedy, and sometimes the comedies would get some of the Oscar nominations. Usually not, actually. I think, like, for example, Lost in Translation, I don't think Bill Murray got a nod for that. That's a glaring omission to me, I think, because I really like that film. This time, though, I think, I think Poor Things is a comedy. I think you could even argue that The Holdovers is a comedy a little bit. I think the lines are blurring between that. Now, obviously, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon are very much from. Oh,
Those are
Barbie,
just
of course.
slapstick,
Barbie.
slapstick, 100%.
Hilarious. Can I ask what you voted for? Was it Killers of the Flower Moon?
I can't say what I voted for, but
I'm
I
sorry. Yeah, you
can
can't ask that.
I can.
But
Okay.
I can express my frustrations about the fact that Bottoms didn't get any recognition. Like, if you're talking about different sorts of comedies, like, Poor Things, I think, is comedy adjacent, right? And that's a thing that I think has been kind of the sticking point for me over the years with the Globes. And I'm sure that a lot of people feel the same way when something like The Martian gets nominated. And it's like, is that really, a comedy? It's not a comedy.
Right,
It's certainly
yeah,
not a
no,
musical, right?
it
But
was a
it's
joke, yeah.
comedy adjacent. Yeah. And so why does that get nominated? And then you have one of, in my opinion, one of the very best comedies of the year not getting recognition. And that I think is really strange because a film like Bottoms deserved certainly nominations across the board. And I'm perplexed why that is the case, but I think it comes down to possibly the like a drama can travel globally quite comfortably, right? A thriller can travel globally, not a problem whatsoever. Comedies are very regionally specific. And, you know, I can't talk for my other voters, but it's like, does the comedy of Bottoms, which is very queer focused, it's very in your face stuff, does that travel as well as, you know, something like Poor Things does? Poor Things has an entry point that is very easy because of the visual style. And yes, it's dealing with similar kinds of themes of sexual liberation and things like that, but it's also couched in this framework of, you know, these beautiful costumes and this absurdism and things like that. So it makes it easier to approach. Whereas Bottoms is a high school musical kind of comedy. And it's like, you know,
A
like
traditional comedy,
that's, yeah, traditional comedy. And that's, I don't know, like it disappoints me that that didn't get some kind of recognition anywhere in the award season whatsoever. I think it's quite a wonderful film. And then something like No Hard Feelings gets, you know, Jennifer Lawrence gets nominated. And I wonder if it's because of her braveness in the performance there. I didn't find the film very good, but you know, it's the old catchphrase basically. If you know you embrace nudity, then you get recognized for it. And that's a whole creepy avenue that you go down. But yeah, that's my take on comedy at the very least.
That's how Cillian Murphy got nominated. You know, nudity got him the rest of the way. The performance was pretty good, yeah. But can I ask you about so what I remember watching the telecast, and it was entertaining. I mean, the Globes were kind of always entertaining. I know Ricky Gervais is very controversial. He loves his cat, so I forgive him a little bit for that. But he would just take the piss out of the awards. We didn't really have that this year, but to your point, Jill, about the most popular film, you know, that really came out of The Dark Knight, you know, it not being nominated, and then they expanded it to 10, and I think that kind of, yeah, I mean, definitely we have popular films in the top 10 this year, no question, even with a more diverse, you know, nominees, but the popular, I found it really interesting that the Globes still did the popular award. Because basically, the way I interpreted that award, I was surprised to see it, was which award made the most money? And so the answer is Barbie. And I was like, how could they award this to anything but Barbie? So
I
I'm
don't quite
guessing you voted
understand
for
it.
Barbie, but don't tell me.
Yeah, look, I'm with you, Jill. I don't quite understand it too. And we all like, yeah, it is an award,
It
it
just doesn't make any
exists.
sense because, you know, what are you doing? Okay, are you taking into account culturally what was popular? Again, that would be Barbie. Like that swept, right? Or are you taking into account box office? Or are you taking into account that, okay, you know, maybe this isn't a cinematic experience, but again, it was dominating, you know, pop culture again, Barbie. So what does that mean? What does it even mean?
Like
Is it is
accessibility,
it
maybe it's easy
yeah,
to watch.
is it the category for, you know, the Michael Bay movies? Is that what it's for? Or for the Marvel movies? Like what is it? Is it for those movies that will not get any recognition in any other category? Because that's what I'm thinking is, okay, there were all these movies that, you know, everybody loved, but they're not, you know, great movies. And so they're not going to be nominated for Best Picture or whatever. It's just a weird category that I'm not quite sure.
And
How do you vote on that? I don't understand. I don't get it.
well, I mean, how I voted on it was basically looked at what had a cultural impact, and you know, that's it. And there were thankfully many options to have from there
Did they give
that
you
had a cultural
guidance on
impact.
that? Did they No. So it's
Oh, good.
just,
Good.
so you set your own
Yeah.
parameters for what you think. Okay.
Pretty much across the board, that's
Yeah.
how we vote, and that's how we decide on what gets nominated. And it's the same for, we have a list of films that we can vote from, just in the same that the Oscars do.
Sure.
People need to submit their
Sure.
films, and so we can
Sure.
only vote from that particular list, which is why a film like Talk to Me didn't get any kind of recognition, even though it's
Right.
one of the most critically acclaimed films of the year. But one of the things which I found really interesting is following the commentary on the day of the Golden Globes. It's like people are like, oh, you've got Taylor Swift in the room and you don't give her an award. And it's like, but hold up. For starters, none of the voters are actually in the room. There's 300 of us. None of us are actually physically there. So we don't care who's in the room. And then B, that's how the Globes ended up in the problem in the first place, by awarding
Absolutely.
people just because they were in the room. Like,
Yeah.
what
So
do you
you
want
didn't
us
get an email saying,
to
okay,
do?
Taylor's in table six.
So,
make sure she gets
how
up.
many threats did you get from Swifties? No, I'm kidding. No,
Be
you got
careful.
not
Some.
as many as the Joker fans when I wrote a negative review of Joker.
Oh,
So,
goodness. Ooh.
yeah.
Talk about toxic fandoms. My God, that's
Yeah.
another episode.
I just found the nominees for the box office. So Barbie, Guardians of the Galaxy, John Wick, Mission Impossible, Oppenheimer, Spider-Man, Taylor Swift, and Super Mario Brothers. That is a really tough list. I mean, I think personally, I know you can't tell me, but I would vote for Barbie. But the Super Mario Brothers, yeah, it made a lot of money, but was it a cinematic
But
achievement?
again, that's the weird thing about this category is that you're picking a
Right.
film that what I mean, to me, I would think the parameters would be okay, what made the most impact in terms of, you know,
So Andrew, I
yeah,
think what we're
I don't
saying,
envy you. I don't envy you on
yeah.
that task.
If
So
you can lobby them next
thank you
year
for
and say
taking
this is a bullshit category, I'm not saying that much, but it is I'm sure it was a weird category for you. Can I probably should wrap up soon, but can I ask about just like what you saw? Did you see some growth, if you're allowed to speak on that?
I mean, from a outsider slash insider perspective, yeah, I feel there is a concerted effort to actually change and become something that is important and valuable because, like them or loathe them, like the Globes have some kind of importance, and this is a path to recognizing what that particular importance actually is. And so, it's going to take years for them to really reconfigure and adjust to what they need to be. If I'm part of that journey, great. If not, at the very least, I've done it once. And that's, I can say that I've been a Golden Globes voter, and that's nice on my
Well, I
resume,
hope
right?
that you are
That's
still on
cool.
there and that they, you know, and continue, they continue to grow and improve. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that it was such a open secret, you know, because I have, you know, friends that, you know, I've one of my good friends is in the Producers Guild, and then I have friends that work for the Academy and work for DGA. And it was an open secret forever about what was going on there, and no one was up to the task of challenging it, right? And it was just kind of one of those things that you jump through these hoops and you'll get lauded. And then, I mean, when there's money involved, and if you're getting attention on your film or your performance or whatever, that brings you more money. And so you know, that's so no one was willing to speak out about it. And so I think now that it's kind of been dismantled and being put back together, and I think there could be some really positive things that come out of it, if they keep trending in that direction. So
I
I
hope
hope
so.
you're still a part of that.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thank you. But I want to also add, like, all of us voters, we're not paid. Like, there are a certain
Right.
section of them who hangovers
Right,
from the
right, right.
previous group that
Right.
still get some kind of payment. I'm not too sure about that, but for full transparency, like the amount of stuff that I actually received, I received, as part of the voting process. Like, I got
Screeners.
three, four things. I got screeners galore, but physical media, I got Elemental on
Oh,
Blu-ray,
nice.
which
Okay.
I but I also got a screener for it. I got the Oppenheimer soundtrack on vinyl. Wonderful. And probably the most prized possession is the sheet music for The Fire
Oh,
Inside,
that's cool.
for
That's
Flame in the
cool.
Pot.
Diane Warren, yeah. Well, yeah,
Right.
I
So,
think it must be cool. The thing is, I do know a little bit about the history,
what a
and
bribe.
yeah, well, it's huge.
exact flame and hot. Just give it to Diane Warren right now. But and this is a name I do not bring up very often, but there were the notorious Weinstein campaigns, Miramax in the 90s, and that kind of set the bar higher for other studios, and they participated. And I think that the Globes were, because they were early, buzz is a reality in award seasons. And I think that there were, so I think the prior year swag was a little bit more than those three items you showed us, but I'm
It's
not going to speculate.
definitely more than the Flamin' Hot sheet music,
Yeah,
which I'm
Elemental
telling you
Blu-rays not getting me to vote against
I know I'm the
Miyazaki.
envy of everybody right now, but please just calm
I
down, everybody.
Now, how much would that go on eBay? I'm kidding.
I
Not as much as your
don't
Babadook, which is a great transition. So thank you, Andrew, for not only just doing your part and pursuing the Globes and really putting your full thought and weight into it, and taking it seriously. I think that's admirable. I think the Globes actually impressed me for the first time in a long time. And actually they did set some trends, and I don't think that I think those trends were there. I think as we saw, just with TV, beef has won everything. The bear has won everything, and then we're seeing the same, Oppenheimer, of course, Randolph, et cetera. But so thank you. But of course, it would be remiss if I didn't ask you about some Australian films, and you have the a massive Babadook
I do.
book, which
Yeah.
is I
Unfortunately,
think
my lighting is terrible at the moment, but for people who are interested, like it's,
Jill,
you know.
don't watch the Babadook. I'm just gonna I think I've warned
I
you.
want to watch it, but I know that it's gonna freak me out.
Yeah,
Well, I mean,
it
this is what is gonna freak you out about this? Like,
I
he's a cuddly individual.
I
I
could
just know
tell you, but I'd
he's a
have to.
queer icon, so like that's,
Yeah,
you know,
there's
that's
that.
cool. But
Yeah,
I've
he was
been told
reclaimed.
that
Yeah.
because I'm a mom, like, you know, it might be a little weird.
Wait a
I don't
couple
know.
years. Wait a couple
You think
years,
I need to
maybe.
wait a couple
Yeah.
years?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then maybe one day I'll make you watch it by putting it in a journey.
Oh
So
God.
I wouldn't traumatize you, of course.
I'm a big wimp when it comes to horror, so I've yeah, I'm
That's
anyway.
okay. Which when you mentioned I forget which film you mentioned with animals, my first thought was Wake and Fright, which is a iconic
Yeah.
Australian film that isn't very well known outside of cinephilia circles. Of course, that's again part of the 70s, but are there I've seen you comment occasionally, okay, maybe a little more than occasionally, about how Australian films can't find their market, and also it sounds like U.S. films or Hollywood films, it's kind of hard for them to find their place even in Australia. So
Yep.
I'll just ask: is there anything recent that you've heard of or seen that you think we should be on the lookout for, assuming it gets to us? We can't control that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch. If I can go on a slight digression for a second, because we're talking
Please.
about awards, like, so we have the Australian Academy Cinema Television Awards, which is Actor Awards. It's a terrible name. It used to be called AFI, but then in 2009, 2010, they changed it over to Actor. And in the past couple of years, as we're talking about the award stuff, like there's been this pivot to they didn't hold the award ceremony in 2023. They just held it a couple of weeks ago because they kind of want to act as like this. They've realized that they've become a bit of a precursor for the Oscars in some ways. And that's a really misguided thing to do because we awarded, and you can blame Australia, we awarded Mel Gibson with Hacksaw Ridge. We put Lion on the map, that kind of thing. And then, of course, Elvis as well. And it's like the question that is continually raised is like, if you look at Hacksaw Ridge, you don't think it's an Australian film. You look at Elvis, you don't think it's an Australian film. So what is an Australian film, right? And that's a question which nobody
Great
can
question.
answer.
Yeah.
I
Because mentioned Philip Noyce, and this is going back probably about 20 years, but like Rabbit Proof Fence, like that's an Australian film. And I'm sure there's plenty, I'm plenty I can't that aren't coming to mind right now, but
The
yeah,
movie
anything.
Australia
Yeah,
is an Australian film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean,
but
but
it's
that's
not.
what we but that's what we
Yeah,
get. I mean,
but
that's
Crocodile
what
Dundee was
we get,
not,
and
and
that
that's
is
probably.
oh God.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the extent of what is that we see.
Yeah.
So, and
Yeah.
we that needs to change
Yeah,
badly.
it does. And so the thing that really kind of gets my goat in some ways is that the 2022 Actor Awards, Elvis swept the board, and part of the reason why it swept the board was, quality aside, like I thought Austin Butler was very good, but the film, whatever. But the film employed a lot of people. It kept a lot of people employed during the pandemic. And so to me, that's why it won the award.
Yeah,
But the most, one
that
of
makes
the
sense.
most pure moments of comedy in Australian TV was when we have in Australia a Minister for the Arts, and they're the person who helps guide how the arts is presented in Australia. And so Tony Burke, lovely guy, he steps out onto the stage and presents the award for best film, and it goes to Elvis. And it's like, well, that's the most kind of the greatest representation of what an Australian film is. And then recently at the Actor Awards for this year, they had this clip reel. They're like, here's some clips of the Australian films that are coming up this year. And it's like the Godzilla versus Kong film, the new Planet of the Apes film, The Fall Guy. It's like none of these are Australian films. Yes, they were shot in Australia. And because of tax breaks, where they get more than 50%
Right.
of the budget of the film, they then technically become Australian films, which is a long way of answering your question of like, where do you even start? There are so many great Australian films that are just not talked about. And so it all just depends on what people are interested in. I think, really interestingly, on Marc Maron's podcast, there was an interview with Joel Edgerton, an interview with Ben Mendelsohn, who are both icons of Australian cinema. Do you want to go through a journey of great Australian films? Just follow them all the way back to when they first began. The Year My Voice Broke is really fantastic. And of course, Animal Kingdom as well, if people haven't seen that, is really superb as well. But
Oh yeah,
they
that's
talk
a
about,
yeah.
yeah, and that's a classic. And then Joel did a film a couple of years ago called The Stranger, which is just a phenomenal film. It's on Netflix. And that is like one of the most intense films that doesn't have any violence in it whatsoever. It's got Sean Harris in it as well. And it's a really, really brilliant film about this undercover cop trying to catch a murderer. And it's based on a true story, but it's very intense. But then I look at something like Warwick Thornton's Sweet Country, which is a masterpiece, in my opinion. I think it's one of the very best Australian films ever made. And if you take Warwick Thornton's name off there and you put the Coen brothers, for example, suddenly everybody around the world would be talking about it. And so it comes down to how do you get people's attention about it, right? And that's what I try and do for my small little group in Australia. It's like try and build some focus on these films. But globally, I've got no idea. Like it's so hard to break into any market, even for indie American films, right? How do you even do that? And so
Well,
it's
talk to me,
publicity.
did. Talk to me, did. I want to say, was Talk to Me A24? That one feels very,
Talk
very
to
much
Me.
like. Go ahead.
Yeah, so
Sorry.
Talk to Me was picked up by A24 at Sundance, but it was
Gotcha.
made in South Australia by a really great team there. And they had been trying to make that film for about 5, 6 years. And every time that they went to a producer, they said, well, you got to take out the Australianness. You got to take out the Australian accents because nobody's going to understand it. And then suddenly, like each time they said no. We're going to stick with the Australian accents.
Good
It's
for
an
them.
Australian story, so therefore we need to tell it with an Australian voice, and it works. It's wonderful. That was my favorite Australian film from last year. But that's the thing, is that we're so eager to
That's
kind
so
of,
shitty. That is so
right?
shitty. Oh
And
my
Jill,
God.
it's a horror too. I mean, and it's a pretty interesting concept, horror. And it definitely did feel, I mean, I can't really speak to what is and isn't Australian, but to my naive American mind, it felt Australian. I've given myself some humble pie here. I've watched a lot of Australian films, and some of the
But
ones
I
we've
mean, way to
mentioned.
be like, okay, yeah, this is great, but let's just have some mid-Atlantic accents here. Like that's
Right.
absolute horseshit.
Like if we did an Australian film's journey, we would not have Lion, and we might have Talk to Me, but we would not have Hacksaw Ridge is a great, thanks for bringing that one up. Great example. I didn't even realize it was really considered an Australian film. I guess the Mel Gibson connection makes sense, but yeah.
Yeah, and it was all shot here, right? So that, and that's the question, is does the location of a film make it what the film actually is? Are all those films shot in Vancouver, Vancouver films? No, they're
Exactly.
not. They're
I had the
no, of
same
course not.
thought. Yeah.
So
Yeah.
you were saying earlier there's about 100 Australian films a year, roughly. Okay.
Yeah, and so that includes both feature films and documentaries. So I cover both and short films as well because they are equally important. But yeah, they're released either in cinemas or on streaming services or as is predominantly coming the case through film festivals. And that's the thing is like they're tending to end up as film festivals because Australian audiences aren't going to see Australian films because we have this thing called cultural cringe where we listen to ourselves and we go, ugh, that's disgusting. And we don't, we reject ourselves on screen. We embrace Bluey and you've got kids in America growing up with Australian accents because they watch so much Bluey. And yet in Australia, we reject ourselves on screen. And
Interesting.
there's a whole reason behind
Really?
that.
That's interesting.
And
I think Australians sound fascinating. Honestly, I think you do too. And Australian films, like when I think of Breaker Moran, I mean
Is it
that
because
look.
of like stereo is it because of like the stereotypes, like the Crocodile Dundee or like the stupid Outback Steakhouse commercials that we get over here? Like, is that like it, does
Oh,
that play into that?
it plays into it, but there's also, a lot of it has to do with colonization as well. A lot of it has to do with the impact of all of that kind of stuff and our still deep connection to England and things like that. So it's a huge thing to break down. But then it also leans into in the 2000s, we had a run of 10 years of really shit films. And they were really like we had films like You and Your Stupid Mate, which is just like this awful, awful film. And it's like,
Sounds amazing.
yeah, they're appalling, right? And so, but that became what we would go and see. And this was after a decade of having a lot of great films like Muriel's Wedding, Priscilla at the Castle. If Americans haven't seen The Castle is a modern classic. Well, not modern now, but it's a classic Australian film. And so but they've really leaned into what it meant to be Australian, and they really put what an Australian identity is on screen. And so in the 2000s, they leant into that into a really terrible, terrible way. And a lot of it's misogynistic, a lot of it's homophobic, a lot of it's really quite racist as well. And so there was this, step back of not wanting to engage with those kinds of films. And in the 2010s, in the rise of filmmakers like Rachel Perkins, Warwick Thornton, these great Indigenous filmmakers, Ivan Sen as well, who's also another modern master, these are all great Australian Indigenous filmmakers that we've kind of had this emergence of an Indigenous new wave in Australian
That's
cinema.
awesome.
And
That's good.
that's where we're having a recontextualization of what is a great Australian film. And again, you just look at all of those people and you look at the work that they've done. Like The Beach, for example, is this 3-hour epic that Warwick Thornton shot of just himself in a shack on a beach. And it's one of the most superb, sublime experiences I've ever had watching TV show slash cinema, whatever you want to watch, however you watch it, is meditative. And it's like, why aren't people talking about this? Globally, why aren't people talking about this? And it frustrates me to no end, but because the conversation within Australia has always been, we make shit films. And it's like, well, that's categorically not true. Like, it's
No,
categorically
there have been some
false.
masterpieces. I mean, David, I'm probably would butcher his last name. He's one of, I think, one of history's finest actors.
Oh, David Gulpilil,
Gupli, I think. And he's an indigenous. So yeah, I guess but what's interesting is when I reflect on Australian films that I've loved, there's often an indigenous component or it's a peripheral indigenous component. So that's interesting. In fact, I just got the 4K of Walkabout. I think he's in that, right?
He is, yes. It was
And
one of
is
his first films, and it's quite the experience.
Yeah, it's
And it's
great.
also an interesting kind of presentation of that's not really how Indigenous culture is. And you see him kind of pushing back. There's a great documentary called My Name is Gulpilil, and it was made with Molly
Yes.
Reynolds, who
Yep. Yeah.
is a longtime collaborator, and she's a partner of Rolf Tahir, who was also a longtime collaborator of David. They made some really stunning films together, but it was made just before he passed away. And it's a phenomenal film. And he talks about his presence in those kinds of films and how important it was to be authentically Indigenous in those films. Because we had films like Jetta in the 1950s, which blackface and everything. And it's like, it's not an authentic representation. So we're an evolving culture, we're an evolving landscape. But
I don't know
yeah,
anything
I
about
just.
having a checkered history. Us
Would you say
Americans
so?
are just
Not just
fine.
in cinema, would you say, just generally speaking, that you're coming to terms with like as a country, like your identity and what, like, is are you in that? Is there kind of a reckoning happening there now?
There should have been a reckoning. So I don't know if
Okay.
you're aware, last year we had a vote, a referendum that was held for recognizing the First Nations owners of
Right.
Australia in the Constitution. And it was basically, should the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people of Australia be recognized in the Constitution as the traditional custodians of this land? And the nation decided, 60% voters said no, we shouldn't do that. And so
Wow.
we had a moment where we should have had a reckoning, where we should have had a conversation of changing
Sure.
who we were as a nation. And because of right-wing media and right-wing journalists and things like that, and politicians, sorry, this huge scare campaign came along where it was
Yeah.
basically, oh, look, as soon as you do this, they're going to come and take your land and all this kind of stuff. And it's absolute bullshit. It's nonsense. And so we're constantly in this state of flux of really needing to actually change and progress and reflect on who we are as people and reject colonization and embrace decolonization. And yet, you know, the powers that be, there's so much dominance of this hangover of people who still are from a generation where it's like proud to be white, you know, and so we haven't really gone through that. And I think, you know, for me, cinema is a way of actually engaging that conversation. It's a way of actually navigating that. And the thing is, like a film like Sweet Country is one of the very first times on screen that an Indigenous voice has explored the frontier wars, right? In high school, when I was in high school, sorry, this is going on far too long, but when I
No,
was in high
you're
school,
good. You're good. Yeah.
when I was in high school, we were always told that Australia never had any wars on this nation. Like we never had, there was no wars. We're,
That sounds
you know,
very
a very
familiar,
peaceful
doesn't it,
place,
Aaron?
right? Yeah, that does. Yeah, I think I learned something in high school about that.
And so, and we, I spent a whole year learning about American history, and I spent half a semester learning about Australian history. And it's like, okay. And so there, I've always, as soon as I got out of high school, it's like, well, surely there's more than that. And that's where I've learned. No, we had, you know, there is a map. If you go online, you can have a look and see where different massacre sites have taken place around Australia, where people have actually been killed. You know, whole groups of nations have been killed because of that. And the cultural identity is lost in so many different ways. So Tasmanian Indigenous people from Tasmania have effectively got wiped out. And there's so few Tasmanian Aboriginal elders there that the cultural voice and who they are as people is lost. And there is this push and this drive to bring that back. And one of the ways of doing that is through cinema. And you know, it's
I think
quite a powerful thing.
that's fascinating.
Andrew, I looked up Sweet Country, just curious if it's available here, because I'd heard about it and it wasn't for a while. And it is, it's on Prime. So I actually put it on my
Oh,
watch
cool.
list, and it's rated 6.9 on IMDb, which is, I think, for, you know, that type of movie, that's actually not that bad. That's pretty good. I mean, yeah.
But again, if you appreciate his, like, that film, you go on this whole journey of what he's done as a filmmaker, as a director, but also as a cinematographer, because usually Indigenous filmmakers will work on each other's films and tell each other's stories. And so he worked on the TV series Mystery Road, which is a great series as well. But there's so much more, and it's not just Indigenous
Right.
storytelling. There's so much
Yeah,
that's happening
sure.
in indie as well. Like The Plains, for example, which is on Mubi. I highly recommend that film if anybody
The
hasn't seen it.
Plains.
Yeah, it is a 3 hour car drive through traffic in Melbourne.
Boy, that's a great
And
sell.
yeah, and
All
but
right.
it celebrates mundanity. Like
Okay.
if you're talking about Chantal Ackerman before, and it's like the mundane life. Well, this is mundane life in Melbourne, and it's a wonderful film. Really, really great.
I love watching other people's mundane lives to get away from my own mundane life. So
Well, and enjoy that Chantal Ackerman. You would actually really will. It's quite a set of movies. I'll check out The Planes too.
Yeah,
I had
good.
heard some things. I don't know if that one's over. And that's Planes, for people hearing this, Plains. Not what it's not
Yes.
about airplanes. That would be a very different movie, I think.
Yes, it would be.
Well, Andrew, where can people find your work, what you do? Is it the Curb?
Yeah, so they head over to thecurb.com.au just to make sure there's genuinely Australian. We have to have an IBN to make sure that we can get that .au extension. So yeah, thecurb.com.au is where you'll find me. I'm going to be a little bit quiet over the next few months. I'm working on my next book, which is again about
Excellent.
Australian films. I did a slight small plug, but I did a first book, which is the Australian Film Yearbook.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna have to pick that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is all about Australian films, would you believe? And it's
Wow.
got a whole bunch of interviews and stuff. And
Cool.
so I'm working on the next one, which is going through a different title. It's called The Lonely Spirits and the King. And it's all about Australian identity and how important it is to have Australian identity on
Okay.
screen. And it's that contrast, like I was saying, between Elvis and one of the films I spotlight is a film called The Lonely Spirits Variety Hour, which just recently got released in America. You can rent it online. It's a film that I think is a genuinely masterpiece of a film. Not everybody feels that way. So, there's a small asterisk. I know I have said that M word a few times through this discussion, but that's a film that's resonated a lot with me, and it's very much in the Michel Gondry style of
Okay.
absurdism and things like that.
Interesting.
But it's that contrast of those two films, and that's what I kind of explore in my next book. So yeah, things might be a
Cool.
little bit quiet for me over there on thecurb.com.au for the next few months, but that next book will be popping up around July,
Awesome.
August
Wow.
time.
Well,
I hope we can
congrats.
get it. Yeah. I mean, well, I guess we could order it from Australia if it doesn't come out here. I mean, I order things
It
from.
will. It's because it's
Yeah.
going to be the downside is that I have to self-publish all of these kinds of things because the interest level from traditional publishers is nobody is interested in reading about Australian films. And it's like, well, thank you for having a vote of confidence in me. But yeah. Oh, there you go, Australian
Yeah,
films. Wicked.
no, I totally get. So I have been working on. I put it in quotes here because it. I don't know if I am working on it. I think in my mind I'm working on it, but I've been researching Frederick March and his wife Florence Eldridge, and they were, on stage and screen, and so I want to write a book about them. There is no one on this earth that wants to publish that shit. So, and I have spent so much money, so much time. Yes. Yeah. So I so I think self-pub will be the way I have to go with it. So
Yep.
I feel you. It's like it's
Yeah.
one of those things that's I know it's never gonna make me a dime, but it's like I have to do it for me and the other like seven people that want to read it. So,
I mean,
Eight.
eight people. Yeah,
nine if nine too if Andrew if you want to read it.
I'm very keen to read it.
I think what you have a lot of readers from our group.
But it's like just over here, like I've got a stack of books, and the key thing is like, I have a whole bunch of health problems and stuff like that, and have gone through moments where don't not to get too serious right at the end, but it's like I've gone through moments where I've almost died, and it's like, well, what happens to all those interviews that I've
Yeah.
done? Where would they go? And so it's like, well, if I put them in a book. And I, as I was saying, like I've got a whole stack of Australian film books here, which I picked up from secondhand bookstores. And my dream, like it's such a small dream, but it's like in 10 years' time, I want somebody to have donated their copy of their book And then some kid or some person
That's great.
walks into the secondhand bookstore and picks it
That's
up
so.
and goes, I didn't know this existed. Or I knew this, or even better would be, I knew this existed, but I didn't know this story about this film. So that's my dream. Yeah.
Let me tell you
That's,
something.
yeah.
I am on so many antidepressants, so I can't really cry, but that actually got like a little
Oh.
tear
Oh.
right here in the corner. Like, so
Oh. Well,
just
thanks,
know that
Jill.
if I wasn't so highly medicated, I would be like ugly crying right now.
Yeah,
That's very
I have
sweet.
it on evidence, on good authority. She sometimes laughs until she cries. So, yeah.
that's the reason to do it. You're doing it for the right reasons, is
It's
that
for
maybe
your legacy, yeah.
someone will stumble upon that and discover a beautiful world. So, you're a good one.
Yeah,
You're a good
thank you.
one.
You look great, by the way. So I know a thing or two about illnesses. So yeah,
Yeah.
it looks like you're doing well. So
I'm
great to talk to
live,
you.
which is
You're
good.
breathing. Likewise, yeah. We have that. So
As
I
people
yeah.
say when people go to me, how are you feeling? I'm like, well, I'm not dead, so that's a plus. And
Yeah,
they don't know
that's
how to respond to that, but it's like that's my level of like, cool.
No,
Yeah,
I trust me.
I
I know
usually
the
will say
feeling. Yeah.
something. One time there was a woman that asked me how I was doing, and I was like, well, I woke up this morning, and she looked at me and then used that as like a door to like try to proselytize to me. And I was like, oh, I don't like. And she was like, well, with the blood of Jesus. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna,
Does it go with your morning coffee? I don't get
I'm
it.
just
So yeah,
gonna go
sorry, I'm not
this way.
going
Thank you, ma'am.
Whereas me, I'm just knocking on your door and going, can I tell you about the Church of Australian Film?
There you go. And we're talking about the Church of All Film, international, local, or
That's
American,
right.
Australian. So yeah, great talking to you, Andrew.
Likewise.
I can't wait to check out some of these recommendations. And also, yeah, thanks for changing. We need you on that wall. A Few Good Men. How about we'll leave with that on the Golden Globes for next year and for forever. So thanks, Andrew.
Yeah. Thank you.